Hi, how you doing? Thanks for being here. Thanks for clicking on me. It's funny, when you click to hear this show, I actually feel the click in my body. It's like connected to my shoulder, and I feel this little tinge in my body, and I go, oh, someone else clicked on me. Lord. The big day today in Washington. Oh, my God. OMG. Michael Cohen, who was Donald Trump's personal attorney, is going to, in public, stand before a House committee and spill the beans about what Donald Trump is really like, all the illegal stuff that he does, how horrible he is, how racist he is, all the dirty dealings that he's been through. He's called him a con man. Wow, this should be exciting. This is like CSI Washington. This is going to be cool. That's happening. But of course, Republicans are calling Michael Cohen a liar because he is indeed a convicted liar. He lied before Congress and therefore is and also lied to the Mueller investigation. So he's actually going to jail. So he is a convicted liar. And the Republicans are going to try to stop him from saying horrible things about the president, true or not true. On the other hand, you have this President Donald Trump. Heard of him? He's a liar. He's not a convicted liar. He's an obvious liar. He lies to the people all the time, and you can tell through his tweets and his little rallies, you can catch him at all the billions of lies that he's told over the past 2.5 years. So, almost 2.5 years, let's not push it. So you got two liars going on here. So, which liar do you believe? That's the question of the day. Which liar do I believe? Now, Michael Cohen has absolutely nothing to lose. Michael Cohen's going to jail anyway. So Michael Cohen, in spilling the beans, has nothing to lose. He can just be as honest now as he wants to be, if you're going to believe that. Michael Cohen's got nothing to lose. On the other hand, you have Donald Trump, who lies all the time. It's constantly scurrying to cover up the stuff that he does. And you can hear him lying about it every day. That's a man who has everything to lose. Who should I believe? The man that has everything to lose or the man that has nothing to lose? Who do I believe?
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Who do I believe?
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
Who do I believe? Hey, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here. You really didn't have to do this, but I really appreciate it. You really didn't have to bake that lasagna for me. I really appreciate it, though. Yeah, Trump supporters are a little bit nervous, especially Republican Congress people are nervous about what could come out about their faithful, devoted leader. It's going to be rough. One of the senators, or representatives, I should say, is Matt Gaetz, G-A-E-T-Z, Gaetz, Gotz, whatever. He's an avid Trump supporter, and apparently he's very scared about what Michael Cohen could say in public at this hearing. So this is what Matt Gaetz tweeted yesterday evening, or afternoon, to be specific, yesterday. And again, a kiss-ass Trump supporter. You can see the little shit stains on his lips. Ron, that's not necessary. Well, everything has gone to hell anyway. What's the difference? Anyway, this is what Matt tweeted. He's a representative from Florida. He says, hey, Michael Cohen, do your wife and father-in-law know about your girlfriends? Maybe tonight would be a good time for that chat. I wonder if she'll remain faithful when you're in prison. She's about to learn a lot. That's a threat. That's a threat to make Michael Cohen not be appearing or to not spill so many beans. That's like a direct public threat. Excuse me. That is so remarkably a horrible twit. What are you twatting there? My God. I wonder if your wife will visit you in prison. I mean, that's awful. That's an awful thing to say from a representative, a congressional representative. What? Wow. Wow. I wonder if she'll remain faithful when you're in prison. And then she's about to learn a lot, like he's going to divulge some information that's going to destroy his family, Michael Cohen's family. That's like a direct threat, you asshole. Is that the atmosphere that we're playing these games in today? Well, this guy, Matt, went to the press went to him and said, what the fuck are you doing? And he said, well, I stand behind what I read what I tweeted. That's what I meant. Of course, late last night, he apologized, saying it was probably taken incorrectly. What do you take incorrectly when you write it down? What do you? Well, you misunderstood. It was your fucking words. I mean, what do you mean I misunderstood? It's what you said. I'm not playing telephone here. This is what you put down in words. That's intimidating. And if it's not intimidating, which it is, it's certainly like scum. That's a scum thing to do, a scum thing to say. My immediate reaction is, Matt from Florida, what are you scared of Michael Cohen saying? I mean, if it's not true, then it's not true. But what are you scared of? That your lips may clear up? I mean, come on, man. This is turning into a really disgusting situation. Now, here's the split screen. You have Michael Cohen, Trump's personal attorney, who was there for everything. Everything that was rotten and underhanded, Michael Cohen was there for, to witness it, to hear it. He has documents. He's got all that stuff. See, Michael Cohen, you can lie all you want, Michael, if that's the case, and call Michael Cohen a liar. But if he's got documentation and all that kind of stuff, then, you know, that's a whole different ballgame. And I think that's what people are scared of. He might have real stuff on this Donald Trump guy about his false foundations, about money laundering, about being a con man, about being a racist. All that stuff could come out. Now, the Republicans during this public hearing, which you can watch on television today, I don't know what time you're listening to this, but you'll certainly be hearing sound bites from it if it's later in the day. The Republicans are going to try to shut it down, because there's supposed to be a somewhat agreed upon form of information that comes out of Michael Cohen's mouth. Can't talk about certain stuff. And the Republicans are going to make very, very sure that we don't wander into areas such as racism that could make the president look bad. Not that the president hasn't said things that are already made him look bad, but whatever. This is just so screwed up. I cannot believe it. I keep pinching myself every morning, and I never seem to wake up from this nightmare that's like floating around. So split screen, you got on one side, you got Michael Cohen, Trump's personal attorney, spilling the beans about what they did in concert, and he's probably going to say, I don't know it for a fact. I don't know Michael Cohen. He's probably going to say, Trump told me to do all this stuff. On the other side of the screen, President Trump, I don't call him President Trump in this situation, is meeting with Kim Jong-un in Vietnam. Of course, Trump avoided Vietnam when he was of military age. I mean, Trump went to a military school because his parents couldn't keep him in line. I assume that's the reason. but Trump never went to war, never went to Vietnam. Now he's there in a whole different capacity, shaking Kim Jong-un's hand. And the two met early this morning, Eastern Time, and they were both smiling here and there. They both don't understand each other. They need interpreters, very similar to spouses. They don't speak each other's language. Perhaps they should learn each other's language before they have sex. And before they have sex, it should be consensual, and I think it will be through their interpreters. Yes, Donald Trump has said that he loves Kim, that he's in love with him. And I don't think I'll be able to sleep for a long time after that comment. Ugh, ugh, ugh. A little peck on the cheek is even a little bit disturbing. Anyway, in their opening statements, Trump actually said to Kim, I'll call him Kim, he said, you know, North Korea has tremendous abilities economically, and I'm going to help you get there. I'm going to help you out to become a great economic player in the world. I'm going to help you do that. Whoa, Don, slow down there, Don. Don't slow down, baby. Don't make a commitment that we're going to be helping him to become a great economic. Calm down, baby. Calm down, baby. This is the problem. Donald Trump, the con man, is working deals with North Korea. And he loves Kim. When you're in love, you do things you don't really mean to do and you shouldn't be doing. You know that, don't you? How many promises have you made to your loved one in the heat of passion? And then you said, ooh, what did I say, man? What did I say to her last night? Or him, whatever the case may be. Be careful, Don. You're playing with my deck of cards here. Don. So that's your split screen for today. Trump is going to try as hard as he can to have something positive come out of this summit with Kim. Because on the other side of the coin, when he comes back, he's going to be coming back to controversy and probably knowledge that I know Trump is going to be watching TV tonight to watch these hearings. I know it for a fact. You better believe there's going to be a lot of popcorn consumed in that hotel room tonight in Vietnam. Trump's going to be coming back to a firestorm. And the more that the Republicans try to shut up Michael Cohen from saying what's on Michael Cohen's mind, the more it's going to look like they're purposely trying to shut him up because they know what he's going to say or what he could say. So I go back to my original statement, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. Who do you believe? Which liar is more believable? It's like the 2016 presidential elections. Remember that? Which candidate sucks less? That's what it was. Which one sucks less? You've given me two suck choices. I must choose the one that sucks less. It's the opposite of Sophie's choice. I'd like to give up both children. Which one do I hate more? It's weird. Everything's turned upside down. It's scary weird. I'm looking forward to the 2020 election because hopefully there'll be some light at the end of whatever tunnel this is. And the whole world's going crazy. England is with the Brexit thing breaking from the European Union, which is already economically hurting them big time and probably would more so. People are trying to break away. In France, man, you have riots, violent riots. They really get into their politics like heavy physical over there. Riots breaking away from the president of France. They ain't happy with that guy right now. There's a faction that ain't happy with him. They're trying to break away. What's going on, man? What's going on here? Why can't we just all get high and love each other? Remember those days? Most of you weren't alive during that. That was back in the 60s and 70s, the psychedelic era. You may say that was pretty screwed up and that the fashion wardrobe was really stupid. Yeah, it was. Because we were all so high, we didn't know what the hell we were wearing. We thought that wardrobe looked good on us because we were high. But that was the love generation, peace and love. What's so wrong with that? How did that go away? I really thought that would stay forever. Love each other, peace among all of us. The planet is beautiful. Preserve the planet and nature and the furry little animals. Get high every once in a while in your apartment with some Pink Floyd in the background and some psychedelic lights. Well, what's the problem with that? What was so wrong? People started eating organic back then. Organic rice, organic flour. That was back in the 60s and 70s. You weren't alive yet, some of you. What was so wrong with that? I don't know. I have no idea what happened. It's like I fell asleep, I woke up, and this happened. What happened? It's time to change my underpants.
Listening to the Ron Van Dam Show is like realizing that you put your underwear on backwards this morning. It's wrong, but it doesn't feel bad, and it's not like anyone's ever gonna find out, so just go with it. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
I don't know if a day goes by when, that's not the end of the sentence, by the way. I don't know if a day goes by, comma, when we don't check our horoscopes because our lives are so misdirected, we need something to tell us what's going to happen and who we are. I've been on this kick for a couple of weeks now. I think horoscopes are cults. I think the horoscope can go on for pages and pages, but you pick out the few words that happen to be true to you at this particular moment. All the rest you dismiss. That's how stupid it is. I know many of you live by it, and I've gotten a lot of cards and letters saying, could you please play the horoscopes on a daily basis? And I say no, I will not succumb to that. But for today, okay.
Greetings, fellow planet travelers. Kip Starchild here with your New England Broadcasting Horoscopescape. Let's take a look and see what the stars have in store for you. Aquarius, the stars say you'll soon find happiness and prosperity, but then I think I hear them giggling to each other, so maybe take that with a grain of organic fair trade salt. Pisces, your beautifully focused pursuit of meaning will soon lead you to a box of toaster pastries. Don't read too much into it, just enjoy some delicious toaster pastries. Aries, unfriend everyone on social media and start again. Choose better this time. Taurus, stop relying on WebMD and get that thing checked out already. People are starting to talk. Gemini, you will soon face a fork in your career path. It'll be the fast food industry or amateur bondage porn, so choose wisely. Cancer, when Mercury goes retrograde and Pluto is ascendant in the house of Cassiopeia, make yourself a sandwich. It will be amazing. Leo, call your mom soon for interesting news. And by mom, I mean the real one. In prison. Virgo, you will soon win a very prestigious award. But beware, your acceptance speech will be interrupted by Kanye West. Do us all a favor and punch him right in the sack, okay? Douchebag. Libra, your lucky number is 26, and your lucky color is blue. Look for instances where they appear together, especially on Tuesdays. This could help cure you of your extreme gullibility. Scorpio, it's time to stop eating things on a dare. Capricorn, now that gay marriage has been legalized, perhaps it's time to take a really close look at exactly why you love musical theater so very much. Maybe? Think about it. This is Kip Starchild, and that is your New England Broadcasting Horoscopescape for the month. Until next time, peace.
Thank you, Kip. Thanks a lot. I referred to the 60s and 70s a little bit earlier before this, and I'm a little older than you probably. Maybe not. I don't really know how old you are. You don't know how old I am, so let's just keep it like that. Who's the liar now? I don't quite understand what millennials are. It sounds like people from another planet that landed here. I don't know what they are. I guess we have to, for some reason, name by category people that were born in different decades. We've gotten into that now. But unless you understand millennials and what millennials want, then if you own a business or you're into marketing, you don't really know what to do. You need to understand the age groups. And with that understanding of trying to understand that understanding, I turn to the millennial experts. Let's see if we can get them right now. Chris Tuff joins us now. He's an author. It's the Millennial Whisperer. Got quite a background of knowledge in this. And we're talking about your company, where you may work or maybe you run a company. How effectively do you retain, recruit, and motivate millennials? Are millennials, Chris, a different breed than other people?
100%. I mean, you know, I think they come along. I mean, the way that I actually designed the cover of my book is I call out all those stereotypes that if you go into Google and you type in millennials are, they'll auto-populate, you know, entitled, needy, dumb, self-absorbed, spoiled. And, you know, one of the big things of what I feel like we need to start turning the conversation around is, well, how do we actually empower them that nothing's going to really, you know, stop them from coming into our workforce and leading our organization? So how do we best actually adapt our own corporation to accommodate what is, what I say, one of the best generations to come along?
Have you, I mean, you're a guru in marketing. Have you found that other generations, that companies did not treat their employees the same way?
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite quotes coming out of the book is millennials aren't the problem, they just expose the problem. Yeah. And, you know, it was funny, I have a boomer friend who's a leader at a Fortune 50 company. He read the book three times, and he's one of those guys that gives me like the tough feedback. And he's like, okay, Chris, we got to meet for breakfast. I'm like, oh, geez, here it comes. I'm very sensitive right now. You know, I just wrote this. And he goes, you know what, Chris? Millennials are one thing I figured out after reading your book is millennials more of a mindset. And you know what, Chris? Like, and he kind of whispered it to me and he goes, I'm kind of like a millennial. I was like, exactly. You know, that's what I'm trying to expose with this book.
Wow. You know, and you talk about hiring practices and that kind of thing, which is extremely important, and maybe Trump should read your book. But I'm just saying, that, I mean, these days, if my generation, when you hired somebody, you had no idea who was sitting in front of you. No idea whatsoever, except for what they may have told you or was written on the paper that they bring in. Now, there's like a whole like dossier on everybody socially. And it's like, does that make it easier or harder or what?
So, you know, one thing I talk about, I think we need to adapt our ways. And, you know, one thing, I think it's everyone's looking for the perfect fit. And I think that's a product of the world that we live in and a little bit of the social media piece that the grass is always greener on the other side. And one thing I kind of tell everyone that I work with is, you know, just stop comparing your insides to other people's outsides because the world is not perfect. And guess what? I call it my 70-30 rule. 30% of your job's going to suck always.
Yep.
And so the 70% should fuel you up. And, you know, one thing that I also kind of bring up is like, especially in the courtship piece is, you know, we got to look at things like trial to hire because you know, let's test drive our employees as a freelance to hire scenario, right, to where let's make sure it's a good fit on both sides culturally. And, you know, I we do that on a lot of our teams, and we have a 25% placement rate. So we're actually alleviating 75% of bad placements there.
Yeah. Is it true that personality and integrity kind of is more important than background and experience? Because companies can always train people to do what they need them to do, but they have to be trainable, which means that they have to have that personality in order to accept that.
100%. And listen, like, it's hard for me to admit, given the fact that I invested over $200,000 in a Vanderbilt education.
Right.
And one thing that we see out there is, you know, it's a product of a world where it's kind of like YouTube University, where it's, I don't know if you've ever done this, but if something breaks in the house, like my fridge broke the other day, yes, my wife came down and it was like half open, and yep, I was watching YouTube trying to figure out how to fix it, exactly, instead of hiring someone.
Exactly.
I did not succeed, but I at least tried. But I think we live in a world where we're kind of learning as we go, and we have everything at our fingertips. And, you know, more than anything, the most important part of I think finding the best employees is more about, to your point, integrity and passion. You know, I talk a lot about the importance of passion and, you know, making sure that that lines up with what the role is that we're trying to fill.
Huh. What message does a book give to somebody that doesn't own a company or run a human resources situation? I guess there are lessons to be learned on the other side here.
Sure. Well, I mean, I was very deliberate in making sure that the examples in the book vary from restaurants to dental practices, all the way up to, you know, Fortune 50 companies. So I want to make sure that a lot of these tactics scale from both mom and pop shops all the way up to larger corporations. And I think they're very different things that everyone is struggling with, and it kind of spans that spectrum. So it's more of a question of where do we need to start that we need to ask ourselves.
Yeah. Another thing that I got out of your book is marketing, in the sense that, yeah, you're marketing a product, but you're also marketing your service and your employees' abilities. I found that interesting.
100%. 100%. I mean, and I think we are made up of, I think we forget how much our employees make up what ends up being, especially for service industries, your product.
Yes.
And, you know, we've seen dramatic results. You know, I've been talking to a few very large companies about the application of this book in their workplaces. And they said, you know, well, Chris, how do I know I'm getting a return on this thing? I was like, well, what metric do we want to change? You know, if do you want to change your turnover rate from 30% of your workforce to 10%?
Right.
Well, let's start implementing some of these things and hold yourself accountable to it.
Yep.
I'm not saying we shouldn't have goals associated to this stuff. I'm saying the opposite.
You're exactly right. I mean, to put it on a simple basis, when I need a plumber, and I do, because YouTube doesn't do it for me either, I go to the plumber that responds to me, calls me back quickly, can get here within a reasonable amount of time. And whether they do a good job or not, yeah, they kind of all do a good job. I'm going for the one that I feel I'm getting the best support out of. That's my criteria.
100%. And I think it comes down to, like, listen, I'm writing this book to help change the world, to bring, I think, more empathy, love, and more human-to-human connection. Mm-hmm. And I think we've forgotten that. Like, deep down, we all just want to be loved. We all want to be accepted, and we want to have a real connection with people. And I think when you create an environment where that thrives, the rest follows suit. And I mean, in using your kind of plumber example, when you make a connection with that plumber coming through, when if he even does just like a C-plus job, you're going to say, listen, let's bring Bob the plumber back. He's actually a good dude.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. He's my plumber. And that's what you want to achieve. That's my company. That's where I get that service out of. It's a fascinating book. It's called The Millennial Whisperer, Chris Tuff has been around. Actually, you're quite a young executive for what you've done, so congrats on that. Things must be working out, I assume.
Yeah, so far so good.
Yeah. It's available everywhere. Where can we get more information about it?
Yeah, so you can find my book at your local bookstore or on Amazon, The Millennial Whisperer. In writing The Millennial Whisperer, I did discover that millennial is a difficult word to spell. It's two L's and two N's. So if you want to go to my URL, themillennialwhisperer.com, I actually have some pretty cool resources. I worked with one of my professors from Vanderbilt to create a millennial leadership assessment, where I have a free millennial leadership assessment, and you kind of see how you rank as a leader compared to what this statistically next generation is looking for.
Good.
So yeah, we're super excited, and I believe the best is yet to come.
Great. Well, maybe you've put together the Bible of successful company strategy. Who knows?
We hope so. Well, we just got word last night that we are a bestseller nationally. Cool. So number 42 overall at USA Today. So wow. it looks like we're striking a chord.
I suppose so. Hey, congratulations to you. And thank you for your time today, Chris.
Yeah, thanks so much, Ron. Have a good one, man.
You too. Bye-bye. Each day on this program, we give away tons of gifts. I don't know if you have your guest stub. I don't know on what platform you're listening to this program, but some of them give away these little raffle tickets. Here's the winning number for today. Today only. 17, 33, 37, 39, 46, 74, 97, 256, 257, I almost messed that one up, 2,572, 2,962, 10,597, 50,368. If you have those numbers, you have won today's prize. I doubt you have those numbers. If patience is a virtue, you're virtuous. Huh. I'm still trying to figure out, which liar do I believe less? Which liar do I believe more? Huh. It's a tough one. It's a tough one. This is a tough one. No idea. I wish you peace. You're gonna need it. Stop on by again tomorrow for a brand new show. We do this every weekday. Until then, bye. Go away now.